Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's Tabletop Gaming Advice Podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the judicious Jen Adcock, the bombastic Bob Queck, and the magnificent Michelle Shepherdson. Today, we have myself, Ange, along with Jared and Josh, and we are going to talk about running a party of all bards. Well, not specifically, more how do you run for a group of characters that don't really have any game mechanic niche differentiating them from each other. And the quicker way to say that is just like, all bards. Before we dive into that main topic, though, we are going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome question, which today is, what is the most useless character you've ever played that you still had fun with? Josh, I'm going to start with you.
Okay, so my college roommate, one of his best friends from home, would always run a Christmas game, a Christmas one-shot. And any character, no matter how ridiculous, was viable as long as they were Christmas-themed. So my roommate played a tree ent that, you know, had tinsel and candy canes and whatever. His little brother played a mimic that always looked like a wrapped present. And like the tree ent would always stand over the mimic. And my husband and I, this was before we were married, but we were together, and we decided to do the pageant mule. So I was the front half and he was the back half. And he decided to play a psionicist so he could be a smartass. And I have absolutely no recollection of anything else about my character. I don't remember the class. I barely remember the name of the character, but I remember having a complete blast with him because he was just like this person attached to a psionicist who was doing like all of the actual stuff.
What about you, Jared?
So there was a Monster of the Week game that I was in, and this was not long after the Pararomantic playbook came out. And I was like, I need to play that because that is the playbook where you are someone that is in love with some sort of monstrous or supernatural thing. And they're not necessarily with you all of the time, but there's moves that play into that and everything. I never used any of those moves. It just never seemed to come up. So what it turned into was my character contributed nothing, but everyone was convinced that I had made up the ghost that I was in love with.
What about you, Ange?
You know, I was considering calling out the times I have played in a Firefly game and played River Tam, but that doesn't quite work because River is actually very, very deadly in combat. It's just most of the games didn't have any combat. It was just the characters going around and doing stuff. And in that case, River is kind of, she's a speed bump to social things happening. But I think what I'm really going to give it to is I played in a Monster Hearts one-shot, which was essentially a senior prom. And I ended up playing a werewolf who was essentially a golden retriever. All she was interested in is getting a dance with the kid she had a crush on. Meanwhile, all the other characters have all these machinations going on between each other and other characters. And in the end, you know, the high school is burning down. And at that point, my golden retriever werewolf character is just like, will you dance with me? And the kid was like, okay. So we danced as like the high school burned down in the background. It was the only thing she was interested in. And it was so much fun.
That wow. thing that was happening off screen in Carrie.
So let's move on into our main topic of discussion. We have talked about niche protection before on the show, way back in episode 80, but I wanted to kind of come at it from a slightly different take. We've all heard the joke about a party of bards, but how can we as GMs still help every player at the table feel involved in the game when the abilities of the characters kind of overlap? So let's get into it. So first up, have you had any experience running for a group of similar characters? Jared, I'm going to start with you.
So this one is kind of easy because I have been in a campaign of Force and Destiny where we were all Jedi apprentices whose masters were killed during Order 66 and we were all on the run, which is a very similar group of characters. And I've also run a game of Force and Destiny where all of my players were playing Jin Sarai. I'm a nerd. You can look it up. It was a thing. Anyway. But yeah, a lot of those campaigns was figuring out what is going to differentiate two Jedi students, other than, you know, the fact that I was playing an Authorian, therefore I probably didn't look like the human a whole lot, but...
What about you, Josh?
One of my more recent Pathfinder second edition games, actually, I've got two of the four players. They're both playing investigators, which has been really fun because it's a Cthulian based campaign. So there's a lot of investigating to be done and a lot of knowledge to be gained. But it's really interesting to see how those characters are playing off of each other. We had a session zero and we talked about it, and they both knew that they wanted, like, that was, it was like the first time playing Pathfinder 2E, and they were like, this is the class I really want to play. I'm like, well, it's your first time. I'm not going to tell you no. So, but yeah, let's talk about it first.
When I ran my Dragon Heist campaign, two of the players were kind of, you know, talking, and they're both like, we want to play bards. We both want to play bards. And I was, at that point, I was like, well, you know, if you two are okay both being bards, I'm fine with it. It ended up being a whole thing in the campaign with the other characters despising both of the bards. But it's like the two players were fine as bards. I don't think I have any experience in a game where everyone is essentially the same class or archetype. I've played in games before that are more like a Savage Worlds game where all the characters are soldiers, mm-hmm. or that mm-hmm. type of thing. But that kind of gets a little different when you get into that type of game. Do you think there are times where you shouldn't allow characters to have the same class or archetype?
Yes. I think it depends heavily on the system and the kind of game you want to play.
Yeah.
If you want to play a really heavy tactical game where, like, the GM isn't going to pull any punches, they're going to be just as tactical about combats as players, and you really need to optimize, that would be the first thing that comes to my mind of, like, you really want to make sure you have a diverse set of characters that can handle, like, you know, the holy trinity of DPS tanking and healing or whatever. There are some systems where you're not allowed to play the same thing, and that they do that for a reason. It's because the character options are so limited that within the type of class or whatever they call it you play, that the game designers have called it out.
I was thinking kind of the same thing regarding if you're playing a game that is incredibly crunchy, mm-hmm. And incredibly tactical, in those cases, you're probably going to want to make sure the players have their character class archetype stuff spread out so that they have a balanced party. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jared?
I also think there is a certain, you have to measure the feel of the campaign, because as we have talked about before, when you have your game that people really want to dig into and get something out of, or you have your beer and pretzels game, and for your beer and pretzels game, everybody might think it is funny to all make up fighters, and then after, you know, like three sessions, half the fighters died because there's no cleric in the party. Nobody really cares about that. Or if you decide to start running like a long-term hardcover adventure and everybody's really invested in it, but just for fun, everybody said, let's all be rogues. And then you realize this is not working and we wanted this to work. That's when it's going to be more of a problem. And you really need to get on board with things and make sure that people understand the consequences of, this is what you won't have if you do this. This is what you're giving up.
Yeah.
And these are the areas where you're all going to be good at this thing and you're going to be competing with each other.
I don't think I've ever seen a Powered by the Apocalypse game say that people aren't allowed to play the same playbook. But I know in most cases where I have played those games, the GM doesn't have multiple copies of the playbooks. So you kind of by default end up with people having to pick different playbooks, archetypes to play in those games. There are choices for the player on the character sheet, but there's not enough differentiation between that version of that playbook and another of the same playbook to make it really work, I think, with people playing the same thing. I could be wrong, but
that's one of the things to consider when looking at the system. Something like D&D, like, you might have problems if everybody in your party is a bard, but there's also so many subclasses and character options and abilities for multiclassing that, like, after level, I haven't actually played a lot of D&D, so I'm just using it as the generic standard, but like after level, like, I don't know, 3 or 5, you can get pretty unique with your builds. So
yeah,
I was gonna say, if you're playing 5th edition, and this is a very specific example, but when you get to the subclass level, if you have everyone that wants to play the same class, it is a little bit easier to try and work in those additional niches into things when you start looking at what the subclasses do. I just had someone start in my Curse of Strahd game, and she's playing a sorcerer, but we looked up, we tried to find her a very necromancy looking sorcerer, and we used something from Grim Hollow, and she has a specter as a familiar. And that does not play the same as other sorcerers that I have seen at the table, because, you know, this, she is basically using this specter to spy on everything.
Yeah, when I had the two bards in the Dragon Heist game, one of them was essentially a College of Lore bard. It was essentially if Regina George was a tiefling. And then the other bard was such a himbo. He was a College of Swords bard who basically had two drums strapped to his hip that he would drum on with the hilts of his short swords that he would fight with. So they were incredibly different. They were both deficient in the intelligence department. So there's a reason the rest of the party ended up getting very frustrated with the two of them. It's like they would continually send the two of them on social missions because they had the highest charisma and were the most charming. And then they'd practically sell their souls to Jarlaxle because he's charming. He's nice. He's got a circus.
Oh, I want to meet these characters. They sound amazing.
They were a lot of fun. So what do you think needs to be established in Session Zero if people are going to be playing similar characters, regardless of whether that is the players wanting to do it or the GM thinking it would be cool to do a, you know, all bards party?
If your players are the ones that decide this is a good idea and they want to pursue it, as the GM, I think you really need to understand the system well enough to be able to point out, this is the core thing that this class does or this character archetype does. Are you okay with all being able to do that? Are you going to step aside and let each other kind of take turns doing that thing? Or are there 2 or 3 things that are core to that archetype and you're each okay with, you know, taking one of those things and being the best one at that?
What you said, Jared, is I think that's true also if you're the GM planning a campaign of like all fighters or all rogues. So you've got to have that system knowledge to be able to help people differentiate themselves. But also during Session Zero, Session Zero is a great time to establish character connections and histories and personalities anyway, but it becomes doubly important if everybody's going to be playing the same quote unquote class. For example, in my Pathfinder game with the two investigators, one is playing a very like Nancy Drew like character, while the other one is playing more like a Mycroft kind of detective. And they establish a relationship between them where like the Nancy Drew character is younger and is like Mycroft's apprentice. So they already have that character dynamic where when they encounter a situation, you know, the Mycroft character might be like, Drew, what do you see here? Tell me. And then so she can take the lead. Or and then if she fails her role, then even though they're the same level, right, the more experienced, the older dynamic character can come in and say, well, you missed this and this and this. So it creates really interesting scenes based on their relationships with each other.
When you're doing your Session Zero, if the players have brought this up and the players are gung-ho for it, that's great. That's, you know, that's, it's, you as a GM are going to have to make sure that you're going to be okay running for that. And this is, I think, an important thing to do, even if you're not running a game of kind of all bards or whatever. Find out what the players want their character to be good at. Like, what is that thing that they want to excel at? And I don't know that this needs to be a formal question, but doing that can help guide players into allowing that space for each other to be good at a thing that they want to be good at. Because I think that is usually when the conversation of niche protection comes up, is when you have a player who makes a character who thinks they're good at a thing, and then they get into play and they find out, no, that guy over there is actually better at it. I had this happen with, I took the ranger who was supposed to be a good archer, and then discovered that the GM's cousin had made some obnoxious prestige class that was 10 times the archer that my ranger was. So even though I thought I was going to be good at, you know, shooting things and getting my Legolas on, I was Legolas from the first movie. He was Legolas from the last movie, you know, so.
I think that's interesting too, because sometimes people accidentally converge on the same niche.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was in a game where I was coming into a Prince of the Apocalypse, fifth edition game, and I wanted to make a cleric, and someone in the group had an Asimar favored soul sorcerer. That's actually, depending on what spells you pick and what you're boosting and everything, that can be as much of a cleric as your cleric is. So then that's when I decided I was going to make him death domain and just, you know, cause people to fall over dead.
Yeah, we kind of had that happen in the City of Cowls game where, there was no conflict because it ended up working out, but Woody created a Celestial Warlock, and TJ made a Tempest Cleric. And you'd think that the cleric would be the main healer of the party. No. He is too busy shooting things with lightning and stabbing them with his sword, whereas the Warlock is the one with all of the healing and the much more divine aspect to him. So that ended up being a little interesting there.
Which also brings up a good point that it doesn't necessarily, like, your class doesn't necessarily define your role in the party.
Right.
So if the system has that flexibility, and like, ironically, considering what you said earlier, Ange, about a high crunch system, you might not want to have everybody play the same class. Like, the more crunch you have, the more options you really have for building out a different role for the same class.
I think when we start digging into this, I think once you're actually playing these games where characters are similar, the important thing is being able to move the spotlight around the table. So do you guys have any techniques you use to move the spotlight when you've got, you know, players who are running characters that kind of have a lot of overlap?
Yeah, I split the party. There's a running joke at my tables that I'm actually running like five games in one, because I just let my characters go off and split in however many directions they want it to go. And moving the spotlight around between them is almost second nature to me. Mostly because I don't like sitting in one scene too long. So if they are all together, I'm going to like move them through scenes and not give them a chance to breathe. But if they all split up, then I can flop there. I can flip flop between different groups or whatever. So yeah, my favorite is, for example, with the investigators, they both go off and investigate different areas of town to find clues in the mystery. One might go and talk to, you know, the witnesses while the other scopes out the crime scene. That gives them both a chance to shine. That's my biggest tool, I think. I don't know, Jared, what do you got in your toolbox?
Honestly, it's a lot of what we've already been talking about, just knowing what is a thing that is true about your character and throwing that thing out there. And maybe just slowing down another player that's ready to jump on that thing because you intentionally rolled it out for that player that said they wanted to do that subset of something that they all can do.
I think one of the things I do, and I do this regardless of the game, is I lean into who the character is beyond their class. What is their background? Where are they from? What is their history? As long as you tailor things to that, then no one else can really step on that. Because, yeah, like, I had two bards in the party. They had different backgrounds. One of them was a tiefling who had basically angered a witch and gotten herself cursed. I think she said she used to be an elf. The other one was a half-orc bard who grew up with a happy family. You know, these were two very different characters, even if they were best friends and both the same class. It's like, as long as I leaned into some aspect of the half-orc's family life, that made it completely different than what the tiefling bard was dealing with. And I mean, this is something you can and should do for all the characters, regardless of who they are. It means you have to think a little more with the role playing and the scenario you've got set up as for what is relevant to the characters. And this is something I tend to do. I will be like, hey, you with your background, you would know this. I do this all the time for Jared's character in our Coriolis campaign, where I'll present them with a scenario and I'll tell, depending upon the situation, tell the characters something they know about this based on their background. Jared's playing Nerimond, who is from high society, so I will generally give him information the other characters wouldn't, because they're not from high society. They don't have the same background. So I use that to give them those special focus moments.
I got to teach everybody how to dress.
Calling out character names while you're like in GM mode, right? Like while you are in the active seat of like describing the scene and then saying, Nerimond, here's a situation, how do you react, before you open it up to the rest of the group.
Yeah.
Right. That's a really powerful tool.
Yeah.
Also group skill challenges, or, you know, group tasks where, you know, it's something that like the baton can be tossed off to somebody else. Like if like some sort of countdown clock, or, you know, 4E style skill challenge where you need to get X number of successes, and one person can't do all of it.
It's also good to be aware of the player at your table who's always like, oh, I can do that. I have that on my character sheet. I can do that. And they're always proactively jumping in to deal with problems. And those you have to figure out how to like hold them back a moment to let somebody else step in and do it.
And also, if you think about like an actual band, right? Because we're talking about Oops All Bards, a band has its own roles that it fills, right? Between like rhythm and bass and melody and lead vocals and stuff like that. If you are going to do a group of all the same class for a specific narrative reason, then maybe look at the rule system and see if there's any way that you can create extra teamwork rules, or finagle the teamwork subsystem. Because some teamwork subsystems are real boring. I say I'm helping, so they get a plus one. Okay, cool. Like maybe you can add some degrees of success to that, or maybe you can come up with some special teamwork actions that happen if you activate something or spend a resource or do something along those lines.
So what do you do if you end up with one of these games and you have a player who is, you can tell they're starting to get frustrated? How do you handle that when the player is getting frustrated because they're too similar to other characters?
I think anytime that people are going to heavily invest in a theme, you need to think about a possible off-ramp. Is it going to be okay if somebody else comes in that is not part of this theme now at some point? And that's actually one of the Force and Destiny games I was in. Eventually, my Athorian went away, and we won't go into that because that's been a story I've told multiple times. But the character that I brought in was not a Jedi. He was a medic that worked for the Jedi during the Clone Wars. It was interesting getting to play this character that was on the outside, that was sort of making contact for them so that they didn't get into trouble or show off that they're actually Jedi and things like that. And it was neat, and it also kind of emerged from what the original concept that we were playing was.
I think it's important to like have a conversation with the person who might be getting frustrated, and see where the game is not matching up with their thoughts or like fantasy. If the party starts off like, yeah, all bards sounds fun, was that because it was like a meme and they wanted to be jokey and do it for a couple sessions, but whoops, it turned into a 3-year long campaign.
Oops, 3-year long campaign.
Not speaking from experience. You know, when they started out, maybe their idea was, well, like, you know, I wanted to be the roadie. I wanted to be the guy that like did a bunch of like crafting or something like that. Then you can say, okay, well, let's try to readjust, like maybe either bring in a new character or, you know, retrain your character so that you do more of that stuffing, or see how you can get back on track for them.
Yeah.
I think sometimes also when you look at everybody's doing the same thing, if you look close enough, maybe they aren't. And I was just thinking of, let's say you were playing a Marvel game and everybody wants to be a spider person. That seems like it's going to be a very similar thing, but Miles does not have the same powers that Pete does. They have some in common, but Miles is venom blasting people and turning invisible, and Pete's more likely to come up with gadgets to fight somebody, you know, that he's run into in the past. Yeah. So, you know, that kind of goes with some of the things we've already talked about, but it is that knowing details, not just the broad description.
I mean, as we've seen from the Into the Spider-Verse movies, it's like, those are some interesting stories, because even if the characters have similar powers, they are very different people from one another. This is, again, getting back to the, are you leaning into the narrative or are you leaning into the mechanics and the crunch? Because if you're just leaning in to the mechanics and the crunch, then that could maybe get a little boring. But if you're leaning into the characters in you know, their personalities and backgrounds as well as the crunch, then that can be a lot of fun.
So checking in with that player who's frustrated is also really important too, to see if they feel like their story is too similar, or if their power, or like the mechanics of their character is too similar too, like figuring out where that disconnect is happening.
Yep.
Sometimes people have an idea that seems like a good idea, but even when it seems like a good idea, it's worth interrogating the idea. And let's say you have people come to you and say, we all want to play fighters. And you ask, okay, what does that mean for you though? Do you all want to be people that primarily poke people with swords? Because you could then say something like, hey, do you want to do something that's kind of like the Three Musketeers? And in that case, and I'm going to use D&D classes as an example here, but like in that case, you might have D'Artagnan as your rogue, swashbuckler. Athos is your warlord that is giving orders and boosting other people. And, you know, Porthos is your straight up fighter that just, you know, pounds people. And, you know, you might have like Aramis as a gunslinger that is better at shooting people when he gets the opportunity. And then all of a sudden they're all musketeers, but they are not the same thing anymore.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, because you can do something where like the characters are all part of the same organization. They just need to fit whatever that theme is, but they don't need to be the same class. They just have the same kind of starting background. So last question before we start getting out of here. Do you think you'd want to run an Oops All Bard campaign?
100%. I've been jonesing to run some sort of World of Darkness or World of Darkness adjacent campaign. I've been playing a lot of like D20 style games with like class and levels and everything like that. The idea of running like a very focused, like single, like house or faction kind of game or class or whatever is really appealing to me at this moment. So yes, I would 100% run an Oops All Parts game.
Oops All Nosferatu.
What about you, Jared?
I would like to look at what's going to be the most interesting way to do that though. Like you can say Bard and it sounds fun, but like we were saying, knowing the game system, it's like, I want to look at the subclasses that are here and if they're going to play different, you know, in some places, like you were saying, the College of Lore Bard is kind of like a bard that's really good at being a bard, which isn't quite the same as the dirge singer bard that is, you know, good at things that are like death and necromancy adjacent.
The thing that has been in the back of my head through this whole episode is like, I could do a whole party of clerics. That could be fun. Clerics have a very different feel depending upon what domain they have. So that could be fun.
Yeah, and there's a big role-playing hook there.
You could do a whole party of warlocks.
Oh, yeah. There's a big, big role-playing hook just in where your source of power comes from. And now that already got me thinking of this like weird council of warlocks that, you know, all gets together talking about their weird things that are trying to reinvent the world.
So let's get on out of here. This show is funded by the Gnome Soup Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link at the Gnome Soup website to the Gnome Soup Patreon. We love doing this and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network. So if you're enjoying us, here's another show you should check out.
Heroes of Hovel's Way. Are you ready to listen to the epic fantasy adventure of two best friends and their raccoon pal? Aramon the Dreaming Paladin and Odie the Starlight Druid travel the barony of Castakin to fight dirt. Join them as they clean up the slurg monstrosities of Valhamoris, the Titan of Earth, on the Heroes of Hovel's Way, a D&D audio drama actual play. What? The raccoon? His name's Monty, he talks, and he loves chocolate chip cookies.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Meta. Anything else you guys want to give a shout out to today?
I want to shout out a newsletter. Book Riot is one of my favorite book websites, and they have a whole bunch of different newsletters you can sign up for, whether you like fantasy or sci-fi or romance or whatever. They even have like newsletter for book deals of the day, which I particularly like because my TBR pile is so long. But I want to call particular attention to their literary activism newsletter. They have a lot of great how-tos to, you know, fight book bans in your area. You know, they cover a lot of news around that sort of stuff. So it's a great way to stay on top of that and also find resources to like help in fight the good fight.
I want to let everyone know that I am playing Dragon Age: The Veilguard. and it is a lot of fun. It came out on Halloween the 31st, and I downloaded it that night and played after all the trick-or-treaters were gone, and I've been having a blast with it. The gameplay is different than the previous games, but it's still very much the world of Thedas, and I'm having a whole lot of fun playing an Antivan crow going around and stabbing things.
I want to shout out the Halloween trick-or-treater who was dressed as Nimona from the comic slash movie. And they had working wings, like working dragon wings.
Oh, that's nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That was like the best costume I saw all night. So shout out to that random trick-or-treater who's probably never going to hear this.
I was just going to throw out there that Blades in the Dark Deep Cuts came out, which is like a whole bunch of like system tools for modifying and adding little modules onto Blades in the Dark. Some of it is like simplifying downtime. Some of it is doing certain systems a completely different way. I love books like this. I love anything that's going to say, hey, here is some stuff you can tinker with, especially when it is the people that made the game that have done it, and they can tell you, if you do this, this will change. I love that kind of stuff. So I would suggest if you like Blades in the Dark or, you know, any other Forged in the Dark game, this could be a cool thing for you to check out.
Ooh.
Awesome. So do you guys think we were different enough from each other to avoid the stew this week?
Yeah, it is a very interesting flavor profile, I think.